You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is managing Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. Our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer with Information Resources, Inc., responsible for developing and operating a solution software data factory. Prior to that, Andrew was the CTO with GE Rail Services and GE Capital Equipment Services. He received several awards during his tenure at GE, including TIP Integration Excellence, Sarbanes-Oxley Compliance Excellence, ACE Award of Excellence, and GE Worldwide's Most Coveted Technology Award, IT Excellence. Prior to GE, Andrew was the CTO of a Chicago-based software development firm and chief architect for a Chicago-based consulting firm. Good morning, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How's business treating you?
It's going very well. It's actually picking up quite a bit, and we're seeing a lot of good activity out in the marketplace.
Well, that's awesome. Now, let's talk about the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. You know, we are looking at this being like any other compliance. Some people take it as Y2K, but the only difference is this is not a time bomb. This is here to stay. Now, most of the compliance that we have seen or compliance effort that has gone in is because people are afraid of the federal mandates. And, you know, this has always turned out to be very expensive. But has any of these compliance efforts helped a business in making their goals, or maybe, you know, further taking their goals into improving a business? Has this helped at all, any of these compliance?
Yeah, actually, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley is tough because anything that's new and this far reaching into in a business's execution and, of course, has any regulations associated with it from a federal government perspective is going to be something that's extremely serious to a business and extremely serious to the execution of the business. And I would say that from what we've seen in the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, even though it's a painful process to undergo up front, it's one of those things that, you know, an IT organization from a process standpoint and then a finance organization and melding up with that IT process, it's a very good thing to do, and it's something that really should be kept evergreen regardless.
Now, when we talk about any of this, IT, basically Sarbanes-Oxley is touching IT as well and, of course, the accounting portion of it. And to some reason, people are tilting this, saying that, oh, IT is the one which needs to deal with this and help salvage this. So how much of this is true or should be true?
Well, you know, this is a tough area because Sarbanes-Oxley is all about, you know, IT organizations as well as the melding of an IT scenario, which I mentioned before. So if a business is looking at this specifically only as a finance-oriented issue, you know, that's not true, and you really need to make sure that your IT organization is engaged aggressively in the same breath, because there is two parts to this that requires a very strict and rigorous finance-oriented aspect and track of Sarbanes-Oxley in conjunction with IT.
So, now, given the effort that must have gone in, because as I understand, you recently moved on to information resources, but prior to that, you did do some work in Sarbanes-Oxley at GE. How was that carried out?
Well, Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, the whole act, and I do suggest that people do, in fact, read the act to make sure that they're comfortable with what it is. There are many parts to it, and unfortunately, the way that the regulations and the law is written relative to the act, a little bit loose on just exactly what metrics and what operational procedures are going to be required and what the government would actually come in and review. But the best thing to do is to make sure that you understand that as an IT organization. So, and obviously in the finance organization. So my first step would be to make sure that you've got a good team on board that is a combination of IT and finance, and that you've put together, in essence, a game plan, if you will. We actually refer to it as a game board in GE, of all of the different controls associated with the app, things like manage data, ensure continuous service. And all of these controls are really established and really surrounding the business's ability to actually execute and factually state that the numbers that they've given the United States Commerce is actually in fact, and they can back it up with the information that was provided. So it is a key piece, and it is something that you have to do. If that team is really established well and the game plan is really lined out well, then the rest of the process actually goes reasonably smooth. And I would say probably one of the biggest areas that's going to cause most companies difficulty is if they don't have pretty decent processes set up, tool set, or just on paper, as well as the whole disaster recovery scenario associated with the insurer continuous service control.
Now, when you mention about, Sarbanes-Oxley, in a way you defined an audit process, this almost seems like that whenever a CEO or a, top executive management, basically they have to stand by the statements that are, disclosed in terms of what was a profit and things like that. Now, it was an audit also does the same thing as a Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, if you think, because you have to, in that case, also back it up with the necessary information and everything else. What is being done differently, or what is required different here?
I think that in the past, when you look at, why this all came about with the Enron situation and so on, it really, from an auditor's perspective, what they're really trying to do is make sure that the financial materiality of the actual numbers, in fact, are being calculated correctly, that the algorithms to get to those numbers are correct, and so on. What the Act is saying, though, now is that they want to go another couple layers below that, not just proving out the calculations and everyone's math is correct, but also saying, hey, your supporting systems that support the financial materiality of those numbers are, in fact, available, are, in fact, truly being managed properly, making sure that people have the appropriate access that they should have, not too much, not too little, that in fact those financial systems or supporting the financial numbers of systems that do that are in fact available so that you don't have, a stoppage of information that's actually feeding those financial numbers. So that's really where the Act is going, probably, two, three levels deeper than what a typical just financial audit will do.
Sometimes given the definition of Sarbanes-Oxley, given that there could be so many flavors of financial systems that need to be backing up statements that are disclosed to the public and other related things, it almost seems like that it's been told, okay, go ahead and make a car. They don't tell you what kind of car, but go ahead and make a car. So when you're saying that get me a compliance, then, of course, every company will have to go and do their own thing. There has been no other than that statement or a couple of pages worth of document, what is the guideline that's been provided to these companies for them to be able to say, okay, this is, of course they would say, okay, this is included, that is not included, but how far down do they go? Do they start ripping apart every piece of software that's written there?
No, I don't think that that's intended to be the intent. Don't get me wrong, in the Act there is a fair amount of interpretation. And, I think that's where you really got to make sure that the organization that you're with, it's a measured interpretation that the business is comfortable with, and obviously that's going to involve all levels of the CXO, chain. And then in addition to that, make sure that you're comfortable with what you're truly saying is the appropriate level of granularity that you're going to go, down to in applications and so on. I don't think they're saying you got to make sure that, a calculation and a program is in fact being done properly. You would hope that an organization handled that properly when the application was put in. But you run into situations in financial materiality numbers where you've got applications that, interoperate into another application. So, take an example where a company has Oracle Financials, let's say. Well, there's many feeding systems that feed Oracle Financials. So, they want to make sure, and you need to make sure that those feeding systems, in fact, are being kept up to date, are being managed from a process perspective, a secure perspective on the data side, and that the data is reaching that system from a financial perspective as expected. you know, unfortunately, you know, you always get into a financial situation where you're doing your operations and, you know, people are looking at data and spreadsheets and pivot tables and spreadsheets and so on. You know, they're also wanting to make sure that, you know, if there is any changes going on in that spreadsheet that you know about it, because that now is materially potentially changing the financial number with not a whole lot of set of controls in place and probably shouldn't be happening. That would raise a red flag very quickly on an audit, especially associated with the Sarbanes-Oxley Association.
And see, they also talk about a lot of documentation that needs to be provided just to substantiate the claim that, okay, this is what we did and this is what we fed into the system. So, of course, you know, going back to its comparison with audit, which to some extent it is an audit basically, where we are trying to substantiate with documentation and other content which was created maybe not only on paper but even electronically. So we are talking about literally making this as a document and a content management exercise along with, you know, coupled with audit.
Well, in a lot of cases that's true, but if you actually look at it, in most cases, where that documentation is being relevant to Sarbanes-Oxley is probably documentation that really should be in an IT organization's process anyway. Let's take an example of that. You know, you've got an example about, you know, one of the controls is managed change. And in that managed change control, there's a couple of subordinate questions or controls that really talk about, you know, how are you making sure as an IT organization that when you actually implement a piece of code, that code, in fact, has been deployed properly, has been tested properly, and that you have the appropriate procedures to understand how it was being developed, what was the particular scoping and parameters associated with it, et cetera. Now, as we all know, that's the normal and typical process that you want to actually have happen in an IT organization in any type of project, you know, let alone anything that's associated with Sarbanes-Oxley. But typically what you see happen is that, you know, IT is not as rigorous, I guess, as I say, as they should be in making sure that the documentation is spelled out to the letter that needs to. That's where you're going to run into a situation when you don't have that documentation set up and a procedure that really manages it.
Now, outside of IT, though, what are the types of documentation that would be warranted by the auditors just to make sure that, you know, things are in place? Because, again, we are almost making Sarbanes-Oxley synonymous with an IT audit.
Yeah, and it is and it isn't, right? It is an IT audit, but it also is a financial materiality audit. So when they're looking at the financial side, and, you know, the best thing to do is make sure that you've got a controller in your organization who is directly responsible and involved in that Sarbanes-Oxley approach, however you've decided to go after it. But they're looking, again, they're looking for processes and a flow of information that the business is reporting on that's supported by the data and thus the applications that are in IT. Now, when they're looking at those processes, they're going to be looking at the financial processes of how you are operating your financial organization on the pure business side. And they're looking for areas that just don't seem very well, you know, formed out, et cetera.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and we'll be right back after these messages and talk about us being an entrepreneurial nation, and we are trying to create a lot of hype, and especially this hype is being created by consulting firms where they say, hey, you know what, I have this cure-it-all framework which is going to help you get a compliance overnight. How much of this is true, whether there's a possibility of a framework that could be created which could help achieve that somewhat ambitious goal? Let's take a look at it, do some postmortem on that, and we'll be right back after these messages, so please stay tuned.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
What stock should I buy?
When is it time to sell?
Where do I turn for honest advice on my portfolio?
For the answers to these questions, tune in to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Oliver, Greg, and their guests will discuss the daily going-ons of Wall Street, as well as give you tips on how to identify the hottest sectors and trends in the market. Improve your portfolio. Listen to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra, broadcast live on Business America Radio every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Every organization has two complementary yet competing organizing structures, the hierarchy, or org chart, and the network, the web of informal but trusted relationships. You can see and measure the org chart, but how do you measure and assess the network? On Mining Your Networks with Dr. Karen Stevenson, you'll learn how to measure your network, improve it, and find new ways to take it to the next level. Get the good, the bad, and the ugly on today's networks. Listen to Minding Your Networks with Dr. Karen Stevenson every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on the Bottom Line of Business, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Are you tired of sitting on the bench? Are you ready to get in the game? Then join David Hayes and Jim Inman every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern for The Coach, exclusively on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. The Coach is a program by financial professionals for financial professionals. Know the techniques used on the field by top financial professionals for personal and professional success. Get off the bench and join The Coach every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, live on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Are you interested in the immigration laws that are increasingly affecting the way we all live? Then you need to tune in to Learner on Immigration every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Host Brian Lerner, a certified specialist in immigration and nationality law, will give you updates on current immigration laws and allow you to call in and have your questions answered. The immigration policies of this country affect us all. Find out how on Learner on Immigration with certified specialist Brian Lerner. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Joe Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is managing Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. And our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for the Information Resources, Inc. Now, before the break, we started getting into this hype that is usually created with most such compliance issues, like it was with Y2K earlier and now with Sarbanes. Oxley and the consulting companies are saying that, you know, we have these frameworks. Literally, you see frameworks popping up from everywhere and saying that, okay, we can help you achieve compliance using this framework. Now, given the different kind of flavors, as we already discussed, that could be existing and different parameters that might be governing companies' financial and IT-related systems, how could one framework go ahead and create, be that generic that it literally helps you achieve compliance like this? Now, how much of a truth is there? Of course, people have worked hard to build this framework, but are these of any use or could they actually help?
Well, I think in most cases, you know, again, reading back to the Act, the key there is going to be identifying what's your game plan in mitigating or managing all of the pieces of information procedurally that are needed for each one of the controls. And there are, I believe it's the number of 7, if I remember correctly, controls that the auditing teams and the government will be looking for. So it is, in fact, relevant in that if they have a game plan to identify the controls and where they are applied at what business process area within your business, then it, in fact, could be a good relevant plan that might be useful for your organization so that you're not, you know, in a creation mode while you're still trying to prepare for Sarbanes-Oxley. So there, in fact, may be value in some of these game boards, if you will, that the consultants might be throwing your way.
So you're saying that these frameworks could be used to some extent to at least get a head start on how to go about doing it versus looking at that very cryptic Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, you know, the regulation?
Yeah, I definitely think so because, again, because the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is, again, so much is open to interpretation, and you know, what kind of documentation should you really be preparing, and, you know, how would the auditors really review it, and what's, you know, their measures in reviewing that documentation. You know, someone having access to a predefined process at a consulting company or someone who's done this in the past would, in fact, be useful. You know, let me go back and kind of put some boundaries around in the past. What I mean by that is in 2004, based on the large, you know, the size of the company that you're in from a public nature, is when the government potentially would come look at you from a Sarbanes-Oxley compliance perspective. In GE, we were actually told that we needed to be compliant by the end of 2003. And the reason that we did that is there's so many GE businesses, obviously, it's important to make sure that everyone has all of their ducks in a row, if you will, so that we're not, you know, at the last minute trying to get everything put together for a 2004 audit. So in GE, in essence, we had a 2003 audit done internally within GE so that we were really in a very, very good position for the 2004 scenario.
Now, would you say that there is any similarity between the existing corporate governance policies and regulations which are normally put in place just to make sure that we are covered? Before even Sarbanes-Oxley came, there were some policies and procedures already in place usually, and the framework which have been provided by these companies.
Well, you know, it's a tough one because, you know, the accounting practices have been such under great scrutiny with the government in the last, you know, really since Enron. It's really completely transformed the way that the government looks at that particular scenario, and it also has changed dramatically the way that the consulting firms, you know, the folks that do the auditing are looking at things because they have a very, you know, significant amount of risk now in dealing with organizations if they audit it properly or improperly, as the case may be, and the government finds out that they're not happy with how the auditing was done. So it is a very important issue, and in fact, the differences are going to continue because, again, the government wants to make sure that the American population, American public, who in fact is investing in these public companies, can be confident that what they're reading in a prospectus and the information they're getting online is in fact accurate.
Now, follow-up to that question is that how much of reinventing of the wheel is being done at this time? I mean, is there any redundancy that you see?
When you say reinventing the wheel, could you elaborate a little more for me?
I'm saying, like, you know, since you would see that Sarbanes-Oxley is all about, you know, creating a set of controls and making sure that, you know, they all work, and then you put in a process so that, you know, since it's here to stay, so you have to keep on monitoring it to see if it does not deviate from where it's supposed to go. So, you know, we had, as I said, you know, governance and policies and procedures which were put in place. They were there, and even if you find an external framework which is going to help you obtain compliance, do you actually go and redo that or tweak them further, or you did leave them alone because they had already been working for you or an organization?
Well, in that particular example, I think you definitely have to look at the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance now and the procedures that you've actually developed for it as something that you need to keep evergreen. And it is definitely something that you need to make sure that your personnel, in fact, are trained upon. In fact, that whole training aspect is another one of the controls that is in Sarbanes-Oxley so that the employees also understand how their particular work may, in fact, affect the financial materiality of the numbers in that Sarbanes-Oxley. So I think the real takeaway there needs to be that your processes need to be part and become part of your core and critical ongoing processing of the organization, both in IT and in finance. And, you know, what we did in GE when I was there is we made sure that we held training to get the appropriate personnel up to speed, and we also gave them sample quizzes throughout the year to make sure that they could, in fact, understand where everything was at because it is a substantial amount of information, and someone's, you know, visibility, the pieces of how a process are done might not be really, really strong until you actually go through a training. So, again, the key is really to make sure it's part of your ingrained, typical, normal operating procedures, and that will make ongoing compliance year over year much less of a battle for organizations.
So is this training, what you mentioned, is that already kind of laid out in the compliance on that which person at what level in the organization gets what training?
It is not. It is something that is relatively subjective to the organization, but I think, you know, it's better to take a safer approach and make sure that you have the appropriate managerial level trained as well as the people below. So I think it's really more prudent to be safer.
And what would actually tell us if I were to have say, you know, if I had a company and I wanted to have this compliance achieved, then we need to actually identify that training has to be given, that what training is given to who has to be decided within. And again, that question remains very subjective, as you said. Now, what are the parameters which would govern that, who gets what level of training?
Well, I think you could actually start to ask yourself some of a couple of questions that are associated within each control. So as an example, if we took one that was control related to manage data, what that control really is about is making sure that only the appropriate people have access to data to ensure the data integrity of the application system, and to make sure that if there, in fact, is a request for someone else to get access to information, that it goes through the appropriate channels within the organization from a functional business owner of that information sign-off, as well as the direct manager sign-off, with a direct understanding of the need associated with that person's access to the data and an effective and expiration date, so that you do have the ability to revisit ongoing now your access parameters, if you will, associated to each piece of data that's relevant to Sarbanes-Oxley. And, you know, you really want to pull those pieces out, those control elements out, and identify those through your training plan. And, again, having a good framework and game plan associated will make that process easier.
No, since you and I both know, and even the listeners realize, that we are far from being a paperless office. So while we have these controls that are very effectively put in place in a piece of software, what do we do about the paper forms and things like that which precede the data entry, after which you actually can have that effective access control that we just discussed?
You know, I think that you're just going to have to look at it from a perspective that, you know, in the first year of the compliance, you're probably going to have a little heavier lifting, and maybe that you're going to have heavier paper scenarios associated with it. I think the key element there is going to be the evolution of your processing to a less manual scenario, as well as a less paper-based scenario. I know that a lot of the things that we did were to make sure that whatever documentation we did prepare was, in fact, available in appropriate tool that could be online or hard copy.
So do you think this is an opportunity for a company to actually go paperless as part of achieving Sarbanes-Oxley compliance?
I think that might be a little aggressive in going that far, but I think it, in fact, is a track that could be down that road, yeah.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and then let's take a look at the moving target issue that are faced by most organizations, and actually progressive organizations who are always indulging in mergers, acquisitions, and in the new phenomena of outsourcing. So how is that affecting the compliance, and especially this is not a one-time thing, it's there to stay, and how much of this moving target issue is going to impact the cost of achieving that compliance and the benefits that we get out of it, other than, of course, the penalties that we'd end up paying if we don't comply. So let's come back and discuss this and talk more about it. Please stay tuned.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Politics and business go hand in hand. To find out how, tune into the Tammy Says Show every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. The Tammy Says Show will feature informative and influential guests involved in the political world, as well as some of today's top business leaders. So tune in every Monday and get your questions answered as she cuts to the chase in the issues that affect your bottom line. That's the Tammy Says Show every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk Radio, BusinessAmerica.com.
Achieve total wealth management.
Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You've probably heard it before. After the end of a relationship, a kindly friend will offer those famous words of support. There are plenty of fish in the sea. Well, that kindly friend is wrong, dead wrong, because the fact is many fish are declining in number. And unlike other things, there's actually something you can do about it. Simply log on to GetGreen.com to learn how making the right seafood choices can help keep our oceans healthy and full of fish. It's easy to do. And now that you're single and lonely, you got the time. That's GetGreen.com, a message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is managing Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. Our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer with Information Resources, Inc. Before the break, we were discussing regarding the set of – actually, we were talking about the mergers, acquisitions, and outsourcing-related issue that is a moving target issue. And how is Sarbanes-Oxley to be achieved or, in fact, maintained? Maintenance would be more of an issue versus achieving it initially. And what can be done so that even when the two companies come together where either both the companies were in the process of reaching or achieving Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, or one was already on the final stage and the second one had barely started. So these are all different flavors that we have to look at. So what are your thoughts, Andrew?
Well, I think that you have to look at that and say, you know, when you're doing a merger with another company or acquiring, you want to really understand whether or not those sets of books are, in fact, going to be, in fact, blended with the larger organization or the controlling part of that organization. It would be beneficial and probably assumed that, you know, those companies probably already have Sarbanes-Oxley plans if they're already public. And at that point in time, I don't know that I would actually keep them, you know, consolidated unless there was a true need to actually blend the books. In each perspective, you've got to be able to, again, financially understand the supporting systems on each business front and make sure that, in fact, the controls are in place for each area. It's unusual, especially in a fairly quick time frame, for organizations that are either going to merge or be acquired, for them to be able to handle this type of complexity in conjunction with that. I think the one thing that you've got to be careful with there, though, as well, is whenever you do have systems that are going to be blended, you do need to take the time out and look at your Sarbanes-Oxley procedures in that area and make sure that they are updated appropriately based on that merged application space.
So you're saying, you know, then when we talk about the mergers and acquisitions, you're saying that two different parties come from their own perspective, and they have to come and understand each other's level and restart?
No, I think, again, what I think I'm saying there is, you know, if they're public companies, if both companies are public, because Sarbanes-Oxley really only applies to a public-based company, if they're both public, they both are already going to have, because of the compliance requirement by the end of this year or early next, they're both going to have some level of Sarbanes-Oxley materials or processes already in place. And unless they're actually blending application systems that are going to actually relate to the financial materiality of, you know, a change in that vision, I'm not sure that I would actually blend them except for only in areas where the applications are shared.
Okay, so what if in fact, if you think about it, would they not be just for the would they go into a situation where just because they have to keep the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance effort minimal, they would end up not blending their systems and process, like, you know, systems and applications? That would I don't think so. That would happen that way.
Well, it would depend. You know, mergers and acquisitions is an interesting question in and of itself, let alone from a Sarbanes-Oxley perspective, only because when you look at the interest of a merger, you know, there was something about that particular company that you're buying or acquiring or merging with that you liked. And it's a very fine line in being able to blend that organization's best practices with your best practices without actually, you know, deteriorating those best practices of each organization. So I think that's a fairly complicated question to look at, and I think you just really need to make sure that you're, you know, going into that one with all eyes wide open and making sure you don't create a Pandora's box, if you will, by trying to blend them so quickly, and I think you might end up with more problems in that area. That's a tougher one.
So let me ask you this. Now, since Sarbanes-Oxley is supposed to be like, you should be on an ongoing basis complying with it. Now, would there at all be a possibility, or would there be a flexibility from the federal mandate standpoint that when a company, you know, comes together, eventually at some point of time, it may not blend its systems and application right up front, but they would eventually want to do it because that's going to reduce their costs. Now, during that time, no matter what we say, there would be a point where, or like there would be a period of time when the non-compliance exists. So is there a provision in that act saying that, okay, for this duration, you are justified to not be compliant with it?
There is not, no. And I think one of the process areas associated with Sarbanes-Oxley specifically, again, deals with managing change. And managing change, that's one of the controls. That's where you really have to identify when you're actually going to augment an application system or augment a process that's financially related to Sarbanes-Oxley. You've got to then be making the appropriate decisions to look at changing your processes so that Sarbanes-Oxley remains in compliance. Because the government does have the right to come in and do some audits at any point in time. They're just and basically told people dates, but they do have the opportunity to come in throughout the year to do an audit.
Now, this definitely looks like a tough one.
It is definitely a tough one. It's highly complex, and, you know, making sure that all parties are communicating effectively when there is change in applications and application structure and or data integration, those are key things you should be looking for.
Now, this then let's go on to the outsourcing aspect now, which makes it even it's a different type of challenge because, you know, if you are sending your processes out of the country, which is not mandated by Sarbanes-Oxley, as part of the company is fine, but if you're using a third-party vendor, if they want your business, they will try to comply, but still you cannot hold them accountable, or you can say responsible if there's a damage because they're outside of your country. So, I mean, how are you basically looking at outsourcing posing a challenge, and how to meet those challenges in terms of Sarbanes-Oxley?
Well, and that's another control. I mean, we're touching on all the controls, which is good. That's actually a control that's referred to as managing third-party vendors. And in that particular scenario, what they're looking for is, again, you have so many third-party vendors who are really critical to the normal operations of your business, either from an IT perspective or even from a business process outsourcing perspective. You've got to make sure that you have the appropriate documentation in there that does risk analyses or assessments on your third-party vendors to make sure that you have appropriate escalation and mitigation plans should that vendor actually cause problems or, you know, it could be anything where they have financial difficulties and go under. It could be where they change the way in which they're doing business and affects your processing, things like that. But that definitely is part of the control. And you definitely want to make sure that you allow for throughout the year assessment points for all your third-party vendors where there is a direct relation to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act to make sure that, in fact, you are staying compliant, you are, in fact, keeping, you know, refreshed, if you will, documentation that proves that you've been doing evidence or creating evidence in compliance with the Act.
And how much, I mean, if you were to pick up empirical data, how much of collaboration or active contribution or you can say support that's been provided by third-party vendors, especially if they're out of the country? Have you been, like in your case, when in GE or in other cases where you would know your friends who would be leading this Sarbanes-Oxley compliance initiative, how much of support are they getting from these third-party folks?
Well, I think in general it depends, again, on whether or not that third-party organization is a public company. If they're a public company, they have within themselves the need to do Sarbanes-Oxley compliance as well. And surely by them doing that, you have a lot easier time of them being able to provide you information that shows that you, in fact, assessed that managed third-party vendor control properly and, in fact, are confident that they are still performing, processing, and so on for you based on your service level agreements to your expectation. Okay? Now, when you've got organizations and third-party vendors that are not public, it becomes a little more challenging because there you're really taking the onus on yourself where you're going to have to document, again, reviews with that organization and policing of those service-level agreements to make sure that you are not seeing slippage and so on. Now, mind you, any organization should be doing these things already because that's how, you know, typically people will assess whether or not they're going to go ahead and pay the organization's fees or not relative to whatever service that third-party vendor is providing. You know, they're going to match up what they've done to the service-level agreement. So hopefully that process is already instilled to a degree and just needs some fine-tuning. But there will be a little bit, you've got third-party vendors that are not public-based companies.
Now, in terms of this SLA and you talking about tweaking, would you or as an organization change or rather tweak the SLA and also change the type of work that goes to those outsourcing companies or maybe change the processes just to mitigate the risk of going under like a non-compliance?
It is a possibility. That's a tough one because there'd be so many parts to that. But it is a possibility, and I think you've got to look at that as a general business process regardless whether or not, you know, an organization is fulfilling their SLA requirements. I think if you truly believe that your SLAs are constantly being, underachieved, then you really need to make sure that you, in fact, start to do some risk mitigation on that third-party vendor because the way that really, in essence, reacts with the Act is that if you have a particular third-party vendor that, in fact, supports in some way, shape, or form the actual compliance with financial materiality, then, in fact, you potentially have a problem from an auditing perspective, especially if you don't really truly say what are the mitigating efforts that I'm going to take place on to make sure that that third-party vendor does not cause problems.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and we'll be right back after these messages and talk about the management buy-in. Of course, they know there's a federal mandate and there could be severe penalties, so they definitely give a go-ahead on this. How much of a challenge, though, it poses for the people who are eventually going to achieve or help achieve this compliance within the company and what kind of a sell job or a buy-in that they need to get from the management for all that resources that are needed because this is an expensive proposition. And what is the level of education that needs to be provided to the management so that they easily yield to the request for resources. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
One aspect of the American dream is a safe and decent place to live that fits within each person's financial capabilities. Based on the individual and the community, home may have very many different meanings. Discussion on housing issues. Log on and listen to Let's Talk Affordable Housing with Ginger Burr every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business, Voice America Business.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist?
Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is managing Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, and our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer with Information Resources, Inc. And before the break, we quickly touched the topic of the management's yielding capability, or rather intent to yield to the resource requirements for Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, because we've always seen, like for any other initiative, when you want to buy a new system or anything like that, there is definitely a sell job to be done. However, in this case, we have a federal mandate, so they would be understanding that we need to get this thing done no matter what. At the same time, there would be situations where resources are needed way more than what they would expect, and that's where the understanding of what it takes also needs to be there. So what is the education required, and how do you actually help them support your compliance initiatives? So, Andrew?
Yeah, I think the key thing is, again, I hate to keep going back to this game plan, but the game plan of how you're approaching this is key. And the critical part there as well is making sure that you've got the management layer, you know, executive management layer, understanding what that game plan is, how it will be executed, and how you're going to actually define or measure progress associated with it. Obviously, metrics and falling behind on those metrics relative to the actual project for Sarbanes-Oxley compliance is extremely real, and it's extremely key. So I think using a vehicle that's appropriate with metrics and measures will help, number one, with the training side, because the executive team understands that things are going well or where there's areas that need some additional bolstering. But it's this additional tool that you can use with the other employees in the organization to help keep them educated in the breadth of really what Sarbanes-Oxley is and how it impacts the organization as a whole. So I think that's really the best place to start from. Going beneath that, then, I think what you want to do is you want to call out within each one of the controls, there are specific key elements of the controls that you're going to want to call out, and those are the elements that I would actually really, you know, school the organization on making sure that they put a presentation together that really can be addressed at the executive level as well as through the rest of the organization so that they have a complete understanding, again, of what is the impact to their role within the organization and how well are things going. And the other thing is, too, I think one of the other controls, again, is educate and train, and that's directly what we're talking about as well. It would be appropriate and beneficial to make sure that there's a Sarbanes-Oxley compliance white paper and training plan online, hopefully, because that's the easiest, but if not, something that you can take people through and then do some self-exams with. That will help make sure that you have the evidence to bolster out that control of manage, educate, and train.
So one thing is that, we talk about training and setting out, laying out policies and procedures. We saw that, okay, there's a specific plan that we should use to make sure that management is also bought in. At the time when we are actually trying to achieve the compliance, equally important is the buy-in of the folks who are at the lower level of the chain of command. How is that buy-in achieved, especially for something like this?
Yeah, I think it's primarily because they need the help to make it more real for them. And the only way to make it more real for them is to really make sure they understand how everything they do in their role eventually works its way back up to financial materiality of the organization. So, I know that that's easier to say than it is to actually do, but it is truly relevant. And the tough part, I think, about that one particularly is making sure that the people at the lower arms of the organization don't feel like they're just, seeing the lips talk and that's all it is. So I think the only way to do that is to have the appropriate levels of management in the room, and I really mean executive management on this one, with those lower arms of the organization so they understand that it is real and that you have to take it serious. I mean, as we all know, we've all seen that is we've got company after company after company roll through with problems in this area based on, some of the Enron situation. People go to jail over this, and it could be, frankly speaking, any level of the organization, depending on where the issues really occur. I mean, obviously, they're going to focus it in on senior management because that's the team of people who are reporting perspectives to the street. But, again, it really is key that people see the visibility of the executive team and how important it is to them and that they're also going to be engaged.
So you're saying that to some extent this is more of a fear tactic than an incentive tactic?
No, I don't think you can look at it as a fear tactic. I think you really look at it as though a normal operational tactic, because I think that if people understand and feel that they're truly doing the appropriate things relative to the processes associated with their role or job, you really don't have an issue for Sarbanes-Oxley in essence, because those are the appropriate processes that are there, provided, of course, that those processes and procedures are written down so that they can be visible in an audit, in an audit situation. So I think it's just, hey, please, make sure you know what your role is in this whole thing, and we're going to help you with that with some training material. They do have to realize, of course, though, not to impress fear on anyone, but they do have to know that the implications are, in fact, large.
So any kind of incentives that would help these people at the lower end?
In the past experiences I've had, we haven't really done anything with that on the incentive side. In thinking through a little bit more with you on the radio here, I don't know that I would foresee anything that you really could do that would help. I mean, we did do some incentives now, I think about it, with the team that actually went after getting the processes and so on in place for Sarbanes-Oxley. And that's just, general thank yous for, doing a fine job on the execution of the project and, complying with the Act. I haven't heard, though, but to the same breath, any one of the individuals on the lower arms of the organization really complaining or compelled to say that they didn't feel like they, were well received. So that's a tough one. I haven't really heard of any direct issues on that one, Daniel.
So now looking at the gotchas, like anything else, this might also have some gotchas in terms of the regulation itself, which would literally make it impossible to implement in its entirety, or it would take a lot more resources than anticipated and which could further delay things. So during your whole effort of achieving this compliance, have you come across anything like that people should be aware of?
I think the key gotcha is don't underestimate what this entails. Be very educated on what the Act is before you hire a consulting firm or someone else, because, again, you need to know, and the only way to tell if you're not hearing the right things is if you know enough about the Act yourself. So that is critical. I think the obvious things are also important. You've got to make sure you have a very solid approach and plan and that it is, in fact, measured on a regular basis and has real timelines associated with it that are far enough in advance notice that you can truly meet the compliance obligations in front of you. Other gotchas I'd say that you're going to run into, the biggest one is probably going to be associated with ensure continuous service control. The reason being because that particular control has business continuity planning in it, which is often a large and looming process in today's world times with the terrorist activity and so on and the events of 9-1-1. But in addition to that, you've got disaster recovery that goes hand-in-hand with that. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act does not say that you have to actually execute a disaster recovery plan, although I would highly suggest it because it's a good time to do that, but it's highly complicated. You do, however, must have a true disaster recovery plan that is detailed and in-depth. It will be reviewed in the audit. So I think those are probably the main points.
That's great. On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd like to thank you, Andrew, for helping us understand how to manage Sarbanes-Oxley compliance.
You're welcome.
Now, like any other compliance effort, Sarbanes-Oxley compliance also warrants collaboration between IT and non-IT groups, and also, of course, a blessing from the management to deploy necessary resources. Now, we know that we cannot simply cut corners, so whatever resources are needed, let's let them be provided to the team and so that they can do their job effectively. And instead of relying on consultants to come and help achieve this compliance, organizations actually need to provide incentives of some sort or training at the same time to the people at all levels, including the management, to take on a proactive role and follow the policies and guidelines that are being laid out. Now, since Sarbanes-Oxley is here to stay, this almost has to become a lifestyle for the people in the organization so that ongoing compliance is achieved. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjog All next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.